Have you ever stopped to really consider the sheer volume of information that flows into your life every single day?
Oh, absolutely.
Whether you're slipping through a glossy magazine, scrolling an online newspaper, or, getting lost in an ebook, words and images are just everywhere. But have you ever paused to think about the incredible journey all that text and those captivating images actually take to get to you?
It's so easy to take for granted, isn't it? We just expect information to be there perfectly laid out and ready. Yet, behind every page, digital or physical, there's this fascinating process.
Absolutely. And that's precisely what this deep dive is all about. We're pulling back the curtain on the world of publishing. It's far more than just putting words on a page. It's the entire intricate process of creating, compiling, and, well, mass reproducing graphic and text images to make information available to the public. We're going to trace that incredible journey from the spark of an initial design idea all the way to its final form, exploring both traditional print and the cutting-edge electronic methods.
And our insights for today come from excerpts from The Craft and Channels of Publishing, which it does an excellent job of breaking down this complex industry into clear, understandable stages.
Yeah, it really reveals the unseen artistry at play.
Definitely.
So, if you've ever wondered about the hidden engineering and creative choices behind the media you interact with every single day, this deep dive is your shortcut to being truly well-informed. You might uncover some genuinely surprising facts along the way. To start, let's unpack the tangible journey of information. Print media.
Okay. So publishing through print media traditionally follows three main stages, kind of a meticulously choreographed dance of ink and paper, you could say.
Three stages.
These stages are pre-press, printing, and post-press. Each one is absolutely critical in transforming an idea into a physical product.
Pre-press. Okay, this sounds like where all the foundational magic happens, even before any ink touches paper. What's maybe one of the biggest make or break aspects here that most people might not even consider?
That's a great way to put it, yeah. Pre-press is all about getting the document perfectly ready for printing, ensuring no costly errors make it to the actual press. And a huge part of that today involves desktop publishing, or DTP.
CTP, okay.
This is where specialized software like Adobe InDesign or Quark Express becomes the sort of virtual workshop for crafting really detailed page layouts.
So it's not just about typing words, it's arranging them and all the visuals with incredible precision.
Exactly.
And within pre-press, the first major activity is designing. It's more than just making it look good, right? It's about how elements actually communicate.
Precisely. Design is about guiding the reader's eye and conveying a message, often subliminally. Think about the basic elements. A line, for instance, isn't just a separator. Its direction can evoke speed or stability or even chaos. Shape can subtly emphasize a specific part of a page, drawing your attention without you even realizing why. Color is profoundly powerful, instantly setting a mood or highlighting a call to action. And space, often called white space, isn't empty at all.
Right, it's deliberate.
It's a deliberate design choice that gives elements room to breathe, creates a feeling of depth, and dramatically improves readability.
And then there's typography. We all instinctively react to different fonts. Some feel classic, others modern or playful. But it's the sort of psychology behind these choices that's truly fascinating.
Oh, definitely.
How does a designer use typography, not just for readability, but to subtly convey, say, authority or playfulness or even urgency?
That's where the art truly shines. Typography is the mastery of arranging letters to make the document readable and beautiful, yes, but also to build trust or elicit an emotional response. For example, the presence or absence of serifs, those little feet at the end of letter strokes, can immediately change the perceived tone.
Ah, the little feet. I always wondered about those.
A clean sans serif font without the feet often feels modern and direct, while a classic serif font might convey tradition or trustworthiness. It's subtle, but it profoundly impacts how a message is received.
Okay, so beyond these individual elements, how are they actually brought together? What are the overarching principles that guide a successful design?
That's where the principles of design come in. Things like balance, which ensures visual stability on the page, making it feel grounded or sometimes intentionally dynamic. Repetition isn't just about patterns, it's a powerful psychological tool. It builds familiarity and strengthens a brand's identity almost unconsciously. Contrast is essential for highlighting key information, associating opposite elements like dark and light or large and small.
Got it.
Harmony creates a visually satisfying effect from similar elements, while unity ensures all the different parts visually link together to form a cohesive whole.
Makes.
And finally, dominance allows designers to give emphasis to certain elements, maybe through size or color, making sure your eye goes exactly where they want it to.
So once the design is, you know, perfected using all these elements and principles, what's the next critical step before you actually hit print?
That's pre-flighting. Think of it like the ultimate quality control checklist before takeoff.
Pre-flighting.
This crucial step ensures all the necessary elements, fonts, images, colors, are correctly embedded and formatted within the page file. It's about catching a potential headache before it becomes a full-blown crisis on the printing press.
So if pre-flighting is the technical checklist, then creating a proof sounds like the visual verification step. Is this where you catch maybe the subtle errors that automated checks might miss, like a weird color balance or an awkward margin?
Exactly that. The proof allows you and the client to visualize the finished design. It's that human eye catching what the machine might not, absolutely vital before committing to a full, expensive print run. And the final piece of this pre-press puzzle, especially for traditional offset printing, are the printing plates.
Ah, the plates.
Yes. These are the objects, usually metal, that carry the image to be printed. In offset presses, which are very common, the ink is first transferred from this plate to a rubber blanket, and then it's offset onto the paper.
Ah, okay. That's why it's called offset.
Precisely. And that method allows for incredibly sharp, consistent images, especially at high speeds and volumes.
So with that really meticulous groundwork laid, the document is finally ready for its grand debut on paper. This is where the magic of printing truly unfolds, transforming those careful digital plans into tangible pages. But like you said, it's far more varied than just one big machine stamping paper, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It really depends on the project. One of the most popular methods is lithographic printing, which uses that offset technique we just touched on with the plates and blankets.
Right.
It's the real workhorse for commercial printing of things like newspapers, magazines, books, known for its efficiency and quality for high volumes.
And then there's digital printing. This one seems quite different because, unlike the traditional methods with plates, image editing is still possible right up until the last minute.
That's its key advantage. Flexibility and suitability for shorter print runs. Because there are no physical printing plates involved, you can even customize each print.
Ah, okay.
Now, its cost per unit can be higher than litho for large quantities, but it offers incredible quality, customization, and speed for smaller jobs.
Yeah.
Digital printing often uses the CMYK color model.
CMYK, that's cyan.
Cyan, magenta, yellow, and Kihei stands for black. It's the foundation for most full-color reproduction you see.
Gotcha. We also have gravure printing. Now, this one's interesting because the source mentions its specific use in packaging on materials like polyester, nylon, aluminum foil, even paper sometimes.
Exactly. Gravure printing is great for very long runs on non-absorbent surfaces. It uses engraved cylinders. The source gives that example of the Lay's cover, I think, shiny chip bags.
Right.
It's known for its low cost per unit on massive runs and good, consistent quality on those specific materials.
Okay. Then there's flexography. That sounds flexible.
It is. It's another widely used method, especially for printing on packaging materials. Think films, labels, cardboard boxes, plastic bags, flexible packaging. It uses flexible relief plates, kind of like a modern version of a rubber stamp.
Okay. So very versatile for different surfaces.
Extremely versatile, yes. And often used for continuous patterns you see on packaging or labels.
And finally, screen printing. This method sounds really unique because it uses a woven mesh, like a screen.
Yeah, exactly. It supports an ink blocking stencil. The ink is pushed through the open areas of the mesh onto the printing surface.
And it seems incredibly versatile too. You can print on almost anything. Paper, plastic, glass, metals, even fabrics.
That's its strength. T-shirts are a classic example. Mm-hmm. Because you're pushing ink through a screen, you can print on a huge variety of materials and shapes that other methods might struggle with.
Okay, wow. So quite a range of printing techniques.
Definitely. And once the ink is actually on the paper or the plastic or whatever it is, we move into the final stage of print media, post-press.
Post-press, the finishing touches.
Exactly. These are the steps that transform those stacks of printed sheets into a polished, finished product ready for you to pick up and read.
This sounds like the assembly line part. Yeah. So after printing, you have folding the pages precisely.
Mm-hmm. According to the plan.
Then assembling them in the correct order, which must be crucial for books.
Absolutely critical. Yeah. Get that wrong and the whole thing is useless.
And then comes binding. You mentioned there are various techniques.
Yes, several. Each is chosen based on the product, durability needed, appearance, and of course, cost. You have the sturdy hardcover binding, like for a textbook.
Right.
There's punch and binding, like with spiral or comb binding, often used for reports.
Okay.
There's thermally activated binding, or perfect binding, where the pages are glued together at the spine with a cover wrapped around, very common for paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And stitched binding, often saddle stitched for booklets or section sewn for durable books, where pages are actually sewn together.
Lots of options. And the very last step is cutting.
Yes, the final trim. This is done with incredible precision using large guillotines guided by crop marks that were printed on the sheets back in the printing stage. It ensures every copy is the exact same final size with clean edges.
So that's the complete physical journey from a digital design file through pre-press checks, diverse printing methods, and finally folding, binding, and cutting into a tangible book or magazine in your hands.
It's quite a process, isn't it? And what's fascinating now is how that intricate physical journey, with all its precise steps, exists alongside an entirely different, equally vast landscape of information access.
Yeah, the world isn't just about ink and paper anymore, is it?
Not at all.
Which brings us perfectly to our next stop, electronic media. This seems to cover the digital publishing of ebooks, digital magazines, and also the development of these huge digital libraries and catalogs. It feels like a completely different beast.
It does, in many ways. But interestingly, many of the underlying principles of design and information organization we just discussed for print, things like clarity, hierarchy, readability, are still absolutely vital in the digital realm.
That makes sense. You still need to guide the reader's eye.
Exactly. So electronic publishing generally falls into two main types. First, there's web-based publishing.
Okay.
This is basically the process of publishing content directly on the internet for users to browse and read online. Think of things like Wikipedia, online newspapers, your favorite blogs.
Right. Instantly accessible globally.
That's the beauty of it. Instant access, easy updates, global reach.
And the other type.
The other main type is digital distribution, sometimes just called digital publishing. This is slightly different because these documents are typically downloadable.
Ah, so you possess the file.
Right. You download them and can read them offline using specific e-reading devices or software. So things like e-books that you buy or e-journals you subscribe to fall into this category. You have a copy of the content, even if you're not connected to the internet later.
Which naturally leads to the devices we use for these. You mentioned ebook readers.
Yes. An ebook reader is a portable electronic device specifically designed for reading digital books. They often use ink screens, which are easy on the eyes and have long battery life.
Like the Kindle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Popular examples include the Amazon Kindle, the Barnes & Noble Nook. Even devices like the Apple iPad can be used, though iPads are multi-purpose tablets rather than dedicated e-readers.
And for those ubiquitous PDF documents we all encounter, daily reports, forms, menus online, you need specific software to read them too, right?
You do. Although many web browsers now have built-in PDF viewers.
Mm-hmm.
But dedicated PDF document software is common. Things like Adobe Reader, which is probably the most well-known.
Mm-hmm.
But there are others too, like OpenOffice.org can handle them. Nitro PDF is another popular one. And as mentioned, even Google Chrome itself can open and read PDFs directly.
It's amazing when you step back and look at it. What's truly fascinating is just how broad and intricate the world of publishing truly is.
It really is. From the painstaking microscopic detail of pre-press design and font choices,
right,
to the massive industrial scale of printing presses, and then the global instantaneous reach of digital distribution.
Right.
It's this huge ecosystem that touches almost every single piece of information you consume.
It really is. And I hope understanding these processes, even just a bit, can fundamentally change how you, the listener, perceive the information you consume every day.
Mm.
Whether it's a beautifully designed physical book that feels just right in your hands or a quickly accessed online article, there's just incredible artistry and, frankly, engineering behind every line and every image.
Indeed. And maybe for a final provocative thought to leave with everyone. Consider how those fundamental principles of design and information organization we talked about for print, things like balance, contrast, unity, hierarchy.
Yeah.
How they still subtly influence and shape your experience when you interact with digital content, even when the physical printing process is completely absent.
That's a great point. The underlying structure is still there.
It often is.
Yeah.
So what other unseen processes might be at play in the information you consume that you've maybe never consciously considered before?
Something to think about. We've truly taken a deep dive today into the craft and channels of publishing, exploring that physical journey of print and the vast landscape of electronic media.
Hopefully. And the next time you pick up a book or scroll through an article online or download an ebook, perhaps you'll have a new appreciation for the incredible journey that information takes to reach your fingertips.
Yeah.
And the artistry and engineering behind every single line and image.